Well, hello, and welcome back to Even More News, the first and the only news podcast. My name is Katie Stoll.
Mine, Katie Stoll, is Cody Johnston.
There it is. Joining us today, again, for the umpteenth time, because we love them so much, our writers, our friends, our colleagues, David Bell and Katie Golden.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, guys.
Hi. Good. We're doing it at the same time, Katie.
Yeah.
Everybody say hi at once. One, two, three. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Cody.
I know.
This feels like an awkward moment, which is convenient because today is Awkward Moments Day.
Ooh.
Ah. Oh, really?
Wow.
Do you want to just celebrate by sitting in silence for a couple seconds?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to interrupt. Has this bit gone on long enough?
Yes, it has. Stop.
Okay. Real quick, thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting Even More News. Stop handing over your personal data to the big tech monopoly that mines your activity and sells your information. Go to expressvpn.com/morenews and you can get an extra 3 months free. There's nothing awkward about that. Hi, guys. Thanks for coming back again this week. I booked my first acting job and definitely since the pandemic started, but kind of since we started doing this. So I had a very busy week and stressed, and I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to be here today, and I wanted you guys to have a good episode. So I invited Dave and Katie, but I'm here too, so you get all four of us.
Huzzah!
How did it go? Congratulations.
Yes.
Thank you. It was very fun and strange and surreal to be on a set environment during COVID. I'm not going to talk about it on air because I don't think I can. I will fill you guys in later.
That's fair.
But it was surreal and cool, and it was a reminder of that I have other interests and other skills.
I have other friends, okay?
You know, it was like, oh, that person is still in me, and I still enjoy it. It's weird. I was a little bit hesitant about whether or not I should take the job because this work is so important to me, but that's a fun part of who I am, and it's a passion of mine. And so it was pretty exciting. And there were a couple people on set that I knew from my very first job in LA, and that was cool. And also, we met one of our listeners was working on the show.
So hello, listener.
Hello, and if you are listening now, it was so nice to meet you. It was a cool experience. But here we are. How are you guys?
We've drug you back down to where us commoners dwell.
You thought you were going to get out, but you know, you can't leave podcasting.
Like crabs in a bucket.
Mm-hmm. Well, what it really did, as fun as it was a good reminder of how much I enjoy this work and how nice it is. Like, it's fun to show up and be on set. It's also very special, this community that we've built, and using your brain a little bit more. Not that actors don't use their brain, but it's you show up and you do the thing that you're told versus creating something of your own. And I like having both. But here I am still talking about my acting job, and there are other things to talk about. That's not the news we're unpacking today.
It is really cool to get back into something like that. That makes you feel like a human being again, participating in society and so on and so forth. And I don't know. We're all going to have to get used to that slowly soon.
Yeah, it was definitely bizarre. You know, you wear your masks, but then you have to take your mask off and you're in a room with a bunch of people, and it felt vulnerable, but also exciting. You know, like I've been let out of my cage or something, only to be muzzled again very quickly. Muzzled, censored.
Censored. Best-selling book by Katie Stoll.
Dave, you just got your first round of the vaccine today.
I got it today.
You're canceling the virus.
Canceling, yeah.
I'm very excited for you.
It was, I never left my car. It was a drive-through.
What a dream.
Vaccination.
Ooh, what a dream.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Could you give me some of your bodily fluids, please?
Yeah. I'm selling them online. Cool. I'm going to have a variety on, I don't know. I'm thinking of maybe eBay. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Are there sites specifically for selling bodily fluids?
I'm sure there
is.
Okay, there's got to be.
Isn't that Wish?
Wish? Sure. Yeah.
Wish.app.
Yeah, Wish.app.
But yeah, it was real chill. If I would encourage people to go get it if they qualify. The people were very nice. Everybody was in a good mood because everybody's, getting vaccinated and are vaccinated. It was right next to Six Flags Magic Mountain, so there was like roller coasters everywhere.
So you celebrated with a ride?
No, I wish they're not open. They're not open. Yeah. Anyway,
maybe your second round.
Yeah, I have to do the second round, and then I think it's like 2 weeks, and then you're actually, and of course I still have to wear a mask and all that and do the things the CDC says, but yeah, it was awesome.
We're going to talk a little bit more about where we're at with COVID and vaccinations and getting out of this pandemic a little bit later in the episode. First, I think it's important that we address the biggest news story of this week, and that is the massacre that happened in Atlanta earlier this week. I do not think that any of you guys listening missed this, but on Tuesday night, a white gunman killed 8 people, most of them women of Asian descent, at 3 different Atlanta area massage parlors. This, of course, comes amidst the alarming rise of hate crimes against the Asian American community, due in part to the president and conservative rhetoric and scapegoating around the coronavirus. And there is a lot to unpack here, but first, I guess, we'll get you guys' initial reactions.
I mean, horror.
I mean, yeah, that's you passed this test. That's the initial reaction.
Yeah. It's it was a weird reminder because there hasn't been a mass shooting for a long time, and it was
about a year.
It was a reminder of like, oh right, this is going to be a thing. And I think
they're opening the country back up.
Yeah. And I'm scared it's going to be more of a thing from, supporters of the former president who encouraged a coup. It seems like, I don't know. I hope this isn't a taste of things to come. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just a bummer. I don't know.
I mean, anti-Asian racism has been part of America for a very long time.
Thank
this
you.
This is
yes.
sadly not something that is new. I mean, just last week, people were defending these old caricatures by Dr. Seuss that were portrayed both Chinese and Japanese people in very racist ways. And that was being defended ad nauseum.
Yep.
Of course, our history of anti-immigration started with the Chinese Exclusion Act, where we specifically targeted Chinese immigrants because we were racist. And
were.
We're. It's in the past. Don't worry about it. I mean, like, it was literally they're taking our jobs. They're foreigners who are taking our jobs, and they're not white, so that's bad. And then, of course, the Japanese concentration camps. During World War II, we took our own citizens, American citizens, and threw them into concentration camps, forced them to abandon their homes and possessions, robbed their possessions from them, and forced them into cruel concentration camps. Don't buy the term internment camps. That's just sort of a way to whitewash concentration camps. And that happened in World War II, recent history.
Yeah.
The Vietnam War, where we committed so many atrocities it's one of the more stunning examples of war crimes that we committed during the Vietnam War and that were documented. So, this is not, it's very sadly not surprising, even though it's horrifying. And I think it's like shocking when it happens, but it's not surprising because of our history.
I think it's surprising to some people because I think people don't pay attention to this. It's like hate crimes against the Asian community has also been on the rise recently. Yes. And I think people just sort of don't think about it nearly as much.
Yeah, I think that first off, thank you for that overview, Katie. You're completely correct. This is not something that's new. And yes, it is something that's overlooked. We've had a couple guests on our shows recently. We had Chef Jenny Dorsey on a few weeks ago. And last week on Worst Year Ever, we had Christopher Wong. And they both talked a lot about this, about all of those things that you just highlighted, Katie. And to your point, Dave, it's maybe surprising to some because we haven't talked about it. We haven't put a name to it. I mean, we've put a name to it, but for years, I mean, I think we're in this bubble or we don't see it. Also, it's difficult to prove a hate crime. It's difficult to especially specifically against Asian Americans.
I thought you just asked the murderer.
Right,
whether or not they're a racist and then just trust
we'll
them.
We'll get into that
based
one.
On what they say. Oh, just speaking of, you're saying like we haven't put a name to it. Like there's an NPR headline that says the history of anti-Asian sentiment in the U.S., which is an interesting way to phrase racism, just like sentiment, anti-Asian sentiment.
It's also, this is like not nearly as extreme as what we're talking about, but like I just, the Oscar nominations came out. Mm-hmm. And Steven Yeun got nominated, and he's the first Asian American to be nominated for an Oscar for actor. And it was those little things like that where it's like, wait, really? Like you just sort of have figured that was. And I guess that's what I think is most people just don't they don't think it's a problem. And
exactly.
They're becoming surprised.
Exactly.
To learn that it's a problem. And it's
and it shouldn't be. I had an interesting conversation on set, actually. The man that I was working with, he's Korean American, and we were reading about this news on set together, and I was talking to him about it, and his wife is German. She came here from Germany, and he said that whenever these things are happening, when we're having these conversations, he thinks about her experience growing up in Germany, where it is illegal to deny the Holocaust. It is taught. There is a cultural reckoning with their history, and they have a name for it, and they understand it, and they accept it. That does not mean that Germany does not have its problems. We all know that they do, and there is a rise of the far right that's currently happening there as they're in other places. It's not that it has it all figured out, but specifically in terms of anti-Semitism, they have a cultural reckoning, and I think that here what we don't do, but it's not something we do. We whitewash our history. We teach a version of it. We do not take accountability in our personal lives, even though like, my friend's wife was not a Nazi. It's something that's a part of her cultural heritage that she has to acknowledge. And I think that that is something that's missing. And that's something that is very important in these conversations because it can feel, God, not pointless, but like, you know, sharing information, sharing this thing, that hashtag, unfortunately, is how things get traction online. But talking about it is a step, is an acknowledgement of what's happened. Does that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting when people feel personally offended at exploring the racist history of their country. It really makes me question how that's part of their personality. Like, why are you making the history of your country so part of your personality that you're personally you're offended by examining things like, you know, our racist history or even our racist present? Why is your personality so wrapped up in that you find that offensive or like it's an attack on you?
Why is someone such a fucking dork for the country like that? Like, that's the thing. No, like, seriously though, it's like, who the fuck wants to just like that make that their identity?
Right. Who simps for America that hard?
Born.
People who hate identity politics, obviously.
And like, yeah. And the idea that, yeah, that you, that these things that, like, they get offended at the notion that it, like, our country wasn't great.
Yeah.
Like, of course it wasn't. No country was.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
I want to circle back and talk more specifically about what happened this week and continue this conversation, because I think that it adds a lot of context and other layers to unpack. This is from AP News. The shooter, who I'm choosing not to name today, told police the attack was not racially motivated, like you just said, Katie, claiming to have a sex addiction. And apparently he lashed out at what he saw as sources of temptations. Six of the victims were identified as Asian and seven were women. It was not clear if Long ever went to the parlors where the shootings occurred. One official said he had, while another indicated he may have only visited businesses like them. Authorities said he was also planning to go to Florida in a plot to attack some type of porn industry. And here is the quote from the past press conference. He apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex addiction, and sees these locations as something that allows him to go to these places, and it's a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate. Cherokee County Sheriff Spokesman Captain Jay Baker. So there's a lot here. Also, side note, Captain Jay Baker, who made this statement, also described, you know, also described him as having a really bad day. I'm sure you guys saw that.
Yeah.
You might not have seen that. This actually came through some reporting from a friend of mine, Stephanie, over at BuzzFeed, that during the summer, he shared photos on Facebook of a shirt he got saying coronavirus imported from China. So yeah. That's the guy who you want to be the face of the investigation.
Yep. I mean, saying like he had a really bad day and was at the end of his rope and this is what he decided to do is really interesting, like almost like he's doing PR for the guy, like putting it all in passive voice, you know, kind of making it seem like he was aggrieved by his victims.
That he was himself a victim or somebody that deserves sympathy.
The cops are like, oh, yeah. What did he do? Oh, he killed minorities? Yeah, we do that every day. We understand.
Yeah, and of course, them citing like, oh, we don't think it was racially motivated because we asked the murderer who said it wasn't, is top tier investigation, boys. Like,
it's the perfect parody of this. Like, we
like
asked
cops
the murderer,
and the Simpsons,
and they put it all on him. Where it's like, yeah, he was tempted by these women. They made everything, like, I don't know. It is important to know why this person thought it was necessary to do this because it's important for preventing it. But yeah, everything from the way the cops were wording it, they really felt like they were
right.
Like,
and you don't have
PR
to
for him.
You don't have to echo exactly what the perpetrator says about himself credulously. I think
say.
Also, though, right. I think what's really important, okay, yes to all of this, absolutely. And even before there's an investigation, even if the shooter is being honest and saying, this is about my sex addiction, that does not mean that race is not also a factor. This is just blowing over the fact.
Wait. So you're saying that racism and sexism can happen at the same time?
The listeners don't see my hands interlocking in a symbol of yes, they can. Two things can be true at once.
That's what's happening. He was like, I'm not racist. I've simply fetishized this race.
Right.
And I'm now lashing out on them. No, yes. It's very clear. I don't know. I'm sure the most like dense people right now might have to have this explained, but like most people understand this, right? That like obviously it's racism.
Most
people are one race.
I mean, some people like are saying like, well, where's the evidence that this recent spate of hate crimes has to do with white supremacy or whatever? Which, not naming names, but you know, people are asking that, I guess.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Because they're disingenuous.
Right. Well, but to,
what do you
to
mean? Where's the evidence? You know.
Well, I mean, the thing is, first of all, our eyeballs and ear holes. But in addition to our eyeballs and ear holes, if you spend roughly 5 seconds on Google, you can actually find evidence fairly easily. There was a article called Prejudice and Pandemic in the Promised Land, How White Christian Nationalism Shapes Americans' Racist and Xenophobic Views of COVID-19. And it was a study published November 2020. It talks about how they looked at this recent COVID-19 related anti-Asian racism, not sentiment. They found that the main predictor of the linking COVID-19 to racist attitudes towards Asian people was with positive attitudes towards Christian nationalism, white Christian nationalism. Mm-hmm. So that was the main predictor of people who expressed these racist anti-Asian attitudes.
Yeah.
Particularly in response to COVID-19, you know, like how Trump repeatedly connected it to, you know, called it the China virus. There are other like you've seen it all around, like so-called comedians, you know, like making jokes about it. Not something that's new, mind you. This is not new to last year and this year. It's just that it was really kind of laser focused because of the racism and xenophobia surrounding COVID-19.
I do think there's also just going into that, there's a big factor here of toxic masculinity at work.
I mean,
demonizing sex work. Because this guy seemed to perceive these people as sex workers. I can't say if they are, but he was going to go to Florida to shoot up some sort of porn industry thing after this. So he was clearly like fetishizing Asian women, blaming sex work, blaming these were massage parlors. Like it's there's so much to unpack. Different things rolled into one, which is like, white Christian male, like repressed, like porn sex is bad. I have to kill them. And it's like, good freaking God.
And like, there are a lot of these articles that have that, like, they love this framing of like, well, he was a good Christian boy. And his mom, like, there's.
Wasn't.
And his mom, like, had a cotton candy machine in the basement of the local church.
Right.
So, but here's the thing is what's interesting about that is that, you know, evangelical Christian like nationalism very much can be violent and include toxic masculinity and racism. All like, in fact, one might even argue that both racism and sexism and toxic masculinity may actually be a huge part of this kind of like fundamentalist or
it's
evangelical
all linked.
Related. Maybe they feed into each other.
So, yes.
He was clearly taught that pornography and sex was wrong to some extent, that he felt shamed by it.
Which is like a whole other thing about our culture and religious communities that deserves unpacking. But yeah,
this person, whoever, I don't know much about their background, but just judging from what I've heard, it sounds like they're just a deeply like a broken person, someone who was taught that the world works a certain way that it just didn't.
So he decides to blame Asian women for these like feelings of shame because he's been taught that it's okay to scapegoat them.
Right.
Right. And they're doing it to him.
Yeah. This is all obviously a part of it. And that's what makes it a complicated thing to talk about, especially online, because you hear people saying like, well, wait for the investigation. But it's also, I think it's more about toxic masculinity versus, you know, hate crime. But I don't want to talk about this without centering the fact that, yes, this was directed at Asian women, because it's true. Toxic masculinity and violence against women is a problem that most women in my life are affected by at some point, fear at the very least of being afraid for their personal safety. And so I acknowledge that it's hard enough to move through the world as a woman and navigate all these different spaces. But again, as I'm spending all this time thinking about this story and other stories like it and learning over the past year, I just can't even imagine what it's been like for Asian women. You know, like, you also have that fetishization, that exotic, you know, this ideal of being the exotic woman and that kind of pressure and the comments that you get from men that I maybe didn't even think about earlier in my life, but I've been thinking about that a lot, especially as I talk with like my female Asian friends and unpacking all of this.
I mean, yeah, and I think it's important that like feminism is never used as a smokescreen to avoid talking about racism,
yeah,
which is a big frustration. I think, you know, it's not mutually exclusive to talk about women's issues and, you know, the issues that women face when it comes to racism. And it's really doing a huge disservice to feminism to ignore issues of race in it and just kind of like say like, oh, it's, you know, it's, you know, like it's not a competition. Like they're both issues that need to be talked about at the same time. Another really frustrating issue with reporting on this is it seems like, I mean, there was a Korean news outlet that interviewed witnesses who reported hearing the man yelling about how he wanted is it okay to include this?
It's pretty rough, but I think that. Yeah, you asking about it warns people that something
it's a trigger. I don't know what you're about to share, but I think that if we're warning people now to be prepared or to skip ahead.
It's a very hateful thing that he said, violence towards people. Like the witnesses reported that he said, "I'm going to kill all Asians." And they told this to a Korean news outlet who actually interviewed them. And there hasn't been, I didn't see any U.S. news outlets getting these same interviews with witnesses, which I don't know what's going on. Like, why? Because, like, there seems to be endless information about the murderer, but very sparse information about the victims or the witnesses or, like, interviews with the community.
Yeah, they haven't released all the names. I think some of it's because it's still pending.
Right.
Is what I read. It's all still early for sure. But like,
that's a piece of information that I truly hadn't heard that.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Horrifying. And you're right. I don't know why that's not being widely reported.
Right. I don't want to like say, oh, this is, you know, like I don't know what's going, like why, what the delay is. But there is definitely, regardless of the intention, there is definitely a problem when the media is focusing so much on the murderer and interviewing the murderer's family and all of these, and humanizing the murderer, whereas the victims, they really do. Whereas like the victims and their families and the community, while I don't think they should be harassed, I think it's a incomplete and dangerously incomplete media narrative when those voices are completely missing. Yeah. So, you know, that's a big problem.
I know why it happens. It's so crass. It's the same reason we like true crime or anything else. We want to know what a murderer is like. Mm-hmm. I think everybody is morbidly curious to be like, oh, what's this person like? Mm-hmm. It's awful.
What's their home life?
Yeah. Was there an indication?
Yeah. Why were they like this? What turned them? Like, what's the,
yeah. Yeah. It's the same as when we're obsessed with serial killers. It's all, it's like we find it fascinating. When the answer is usually like they all kind of suck. And there's nothing particularly impressive or noteworthy.
And it doesn't matter what your upbringing is. Like, you could have reasons. You could have some toxic home life. You could have this or that. You still made the choice to do the bad thing.
Most people
don't make that choice.
I think that's why that statement by the sheriff is so deeply offensive and deeply disgusting, that like, oh, he was having a bad day yesterday. Yeah. Everyone who hears that, it's like, well, I have bad days all the time and I don't fucking murder people. It's I think that like in this quest to like understand a killer, it's like we kind of also let ourselves off the hook, like in terms of not talking about what our culture has been teaching this person, because it's like, oh, his psychology. I mean, and to a certain extent, it's true. Not everyone who's exposed to racism and racist ideas doesn't turn out to be a murderer. But that, you know, so it's like, yes, he is an outlier, but the ideas that he was fed and that shaped his worldview that led him to become a murderer are things that are common in our society. Yeah. And so I think like trying like this kind of thing of like, well, what was it in his psychology that led him to do this? And I think like for a lot of people who experience racism, they're like, really? Yeah. Really, you're asking that question? Like, we have been telling you, we could tell you that.
It's not some big mystery. We got to take a quick break, but then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about even more news. Okay.
No, I mean, yes. Does it make sense that the same company who controls half of online retail also passively eavesdrops on your private conversations at home? What about the idea that a single company controls 90% of internet searches, runs your email service, and gets to track everything you do on your smartphone? Probably not, right? Probably not a lot of sense being made there. Sounds bad, yeah? Then maybe it's time to put a layer of protection between your completely normal online activity and these tech juggernauts. And that's why I use ExpressVPN. If you're like, you know, some of us, not me, but some of us, you live on the internet. Again, not me. Virtually every site you visit, video you watch, or message you send gets tracked and data mined. But when you run ExpressVPN on your device, the software hides your IP address, something big tech can use to personally identify you. So ExpressVPN makes your activity harder to trace and sell to advertisers. What I like most about VPN is how easy it is to use, because I am a fool. Download the app on your phone or computer, tap one button, and you're protected. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your internet data to keep you safe from hackers and eavesdroppers on your network. Take that, hackers! So stop handing over your personal data to the big tech monopoly that mines your activity and sells your information. Protect yourself with the VPN we trust to keep us safe online. Visit expressvpn.com/morenews, that's expressvpn.com/morenews, to get 3 extra months free. Go to expressvpn.com/morenews right now to learn more.
And we are back, as promised, for even more news. Cool. Cody, I'm going to throw this to you because it's in your wheelhouse. It's in all of our wheelhouse, but I've had a long week and I'm letting you take
it. Yeah, no, yeah, it's fine.
Well, talk to us about Steven Crowder.
I guess I'll talk about Steven Crowder. Steven Crowder's guy, he makes videos online for people to watch. It's late night, but it's got a conservative kick. He's very racist, and often wrong and a liar, and he spreads conspiracies a lot. He was big on the election fraud story, and things of that nature, and a lot of homophobic stuff. But recently, he was very racist again, talking about basically in the COVID relief bill stuff about money for black farmers who've been discriminated against for many years in the nation of America. I don't know if you're familiar with the discrimination of non-white people in America, United States of.
I feel like we talked about it recently, but
I think we have.
I'm drawing a blank.
Have we asked the white people if they're racist, though? Mm. Like, have we asked them?
Oh, actually, that's interesting. Yeah, because if they don't, and this is literally arguments I've heard of from weirdos who went to my Instagram to comment on my dog's photos about this. But if you don't say, I think, white people are superior to X, then you're not racist. You have to say that. Right. That's what
racism
is.
It's like you have to say you're a cop.
You have to be next to someone who's wearing a shirt with an arrow on it that says, I'm with racist.
Yeah.
That's
otherwise,
the only
you're
way.
Not racist. That's the
you're off the
way.
Hook.
Steven Crowder, by the way, just to tie it back into what we were previously talking about, also super racist against Asian people.
Shocking.
Oh, absolutely.
He did a just like 1940s style anti Chinese caricature mm-hmm. on his show.
I forgot about that.
Frequently connects COVID to China in like racist ways. He did a tweet where he said, "What's your favorite Asian stereotype?" And then has a bunch of Asian stereotypes.
He had a video, Kung Flu Fighting.
Yeah.
The title of the video is Kung Flu Fighting, and then in parentheses, Kung Fu Fighting Parody, in case you weren't sure.
Oh, okay, now I get the stupid joke.
Now you get it. Now you get it.
I get the dumb fucking joke. Cool.
That's the thing. He's for some reason, this recent video got cut from YouTube, but for having like misinformation about COVID, not
yeah,
right.
nothing
to
do with racism. Yeah,
and it's wild not for because the, like 2 minute minstrel show.
Yeah,
yeah,
racist.
Yeah, the video
finish
itself.
Describing the video.
So they're talking about this relief for black farmers specifically, and he and his crew complain about it, like they complain about most things for people that you know. You can find them complaining about teachers, doctors, any race.
He's a man of the people, Cody. He's a man of the common person.
That's true.
Just not farmers or teachers.
Yeah, there's a video of him complaining about teachers and how he, when he was a student, you know, the teacher would only, they'd only sometimes stay after class to work with him specifically.
Hmm. He didn't get enough attention.
Didn't get enough attention from the teacher that has tens and tens and tens and tens of students. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Whatever. That's a different video. So they're talking about this and basically saying it devolves. It's like it's very I was surprised how racist it got,
which is hard to manage.
It's
very hard.
I had to stop
yeah.
watching it. It was too gross.
It's hard for someone to be surprised by Steven Crowder's racism because we already know how racist he is.
You expect it, yeah.
It's like surprising how fully Klan hood mask off he went.
Yeah. And it was like 90s racist too. Like it's that where it's like really like just like jokes you've heard a million times from racists.
And like immediately like just like tying like black farmers to like drug addicts and drug dealers.
Right. Yeah. And they seemed like amazed of the idea that black farmers existed.
Right. They were mocking the idea that black and also Latino farmers, that like they would exist, even though like it's like such a stunning ignorance about our country.
Yes.
Yeah. They were proving the black farmers right. Like they were like the black farmers are like talking about how there's like a history of racism, which there is with the USDA. Which clearly Crowder didn't like look into.
No,
and he just went into a bunch of. He saw the words "black farmers," didn't read the rest of the article, and said, "Oh, we can get about 10 minutes."
Yeah, we can milk this. Because also they tie it to. They talk about how like, oh, well, black farmers. That's the last thing that you'd think black people would want to do in America. Referencing slavery. So like maybe there's something to that.
Well,
like maybe there is like racism again. Like it's just wild that they say these kinds of things without actually realizing what they're saying and like
the point that they're inadvertently making.
Yeah.
Right. Like where are the receipts that there's like one of them goes like, where's the receipts that there's racism against black farmers? Cut to 1 second later, they're doing a bunch of stereotypes of black people.
Right.
Yeah. Show me one shred of evidence. Here's my minstrel show.
There's tons of shreds of evidence.
The USDA has so many complaints they ignored of racism.
Yeah, and this is what's really important about this. I mean, yes, calling out the racist dickheads, sure, but the fact that this is a legitimate issue here in America... is that how hard it is to be a black farmer, particularly in parts of the South, because of racism. Dave, you gave us this research. This is from The Guardian. The number of black farmers in America peaked in 1920 when there were 949,889. How do you read that number? What's the right way to read a number? 949,889. Today, of the country's 3.4 million total farmers, only 1.3% or 45,000 are black. You know,
that's
it goes
a lot
on
less.
To give information. Black farmers who have managed to hold on to their farms eke out a living today. They make less than $40,000 annually, compared with over $190,000 by white farmers. And yeah, there is. You can look into it. There is.
Yeah. This is
documented receipts of how the USDA is racist against black farmers and the and obstacles they have to overcome.
And also, like, if you look into the history of, like, farmers in the U.S., you would know that farmers are losing, like, smaller farmers are losing out to big monopolies when it comes to farms and subsidies, like, monopolies that basically also get subsidies from the U.S. government. So it's kind of a double whammy. And so in addition to, like, the crush of monopolies of forcing smaller farmers out of their business, black farmers, in addition, face institutionalized racism, where they also lose out in comparison to white farmers. And what's so interesting to me about people like Stephen Crowder is that he claims to be a man of the people, like he's not an elitist, you know. But then when it comes to farmers' rights in the face of huge mega corporations, he just like shits all over them because they're black.
I think he didn't think of it farther than that either, because these problems were big during the Obama era.
Yeah.
So like, say he wants to like own the libs, he could do something about that. But he can't think farther than that. He just saw black farmers, those words.
Right.
He seems like a big LOL
lit up in his head.
He's a stupid racist.
He's a self-parody of a reactionary. He's like the definition of
he's like Yogi Bear, like following a smell line, like towards like racist joke.
Doesn't even suit him. Right. And I'll explain it like this. He looks like the dork in your class who's trying to fit in with a group of people and making jokes, like he doesn't even seem like somebody, which makes it even worse to me.
I believe
that on some level, like, he knows he was raised differently than this, and he's just trying to fit in with the people that give him money.
He's also like, as multiple people on Twitter like to point out, like, he likes to cosplay as like Nathan Drake, because he's always wearing a gun holster.
He's got the gun holster and the tan shirt.
Such a freaking nerd. Like,
none of his buddies would come to his wedding if he got married. Because,
like, no offense to cosplayers. I think that can be very cool and creative. Yes. But in this specific context, it's super uncool.
Well, because he's not doing that. He's not saying, like, I'm cosplaying as his character. He's just dressing like it and saying, like, this is how I dress.
Different. Also, cosplaying is a loving, not completely, I'm sure there's lots of stuff, but in general, you know, conventions and cosplay communities are generally loving, you know.
Yeah, very supportive and inclusive.
It gives me big Davis Arini vibes, you know, like where he would wear the cigar.
You got the skull in the back and the cognac.
And the cognac glass, that was always like full because he wouldn't drink it. Same stuff, new year, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about, I might have mentioned this before about Crowder specifically. It's interesting. I mean, obviously, he doesn't believe in half the stuff he says. There have been people who've been guests on the show who've, like, pointed out, like, yeah, by the way, like, he said, like, I don't really believe in this. We're cool, right? That kind of stuff. He doesn't really believe most of the stuff he says. He knows where he knows where his money comes from.
Yeah.
And he knows what he's doing.
Maybe not worse, but the same amount of bad.
It's at the very least the same amount of bad.
At the very least, yeah.
When he started out, before he started just being like racist late night, which is a lot of late night too, but like this kind specifically, and before he did that, and then like tried to be on Fox News for a while, didn't work out, got punched by a union guy for whatever, doesn't matter. He started out, one of his first videos and most of his videos originally were about bullying and how bullying is bad. He was bullied when he was in high school, like you're talking about. Like, he's the kind of like the kid is like, he's trying to like get along with everybody and like, oh, like, I'm joking too. Like, aren't I cool, right, guys? Like, that kind of thing. He was bullied. And so he was very anti-bully. And much like, you know, some people who are bullied, he is now evolved into the bully himself. Like, that's what he does now. He was very much like, bullying is bad, this. And now, like, Trans Awareness Day rolls around and he just shits on trans people. Something like this comes around. He's like, I can bully now. Like, that is what he has embraced.
Right.
Which is
under the, it's under the banner of edgy humor that libs don't like. But like they fundamentally misunderstood how edgy humor works, where there's supposed to be an element of truth or like something being said and edginess. That's like when they, I assume they think about people like George Carlin and they're like, yeah, the libs would hate him today. And it's like, no, because no. There's something, there was some element of truth there.
Well, also like Carlin talked about racism a lot. He talked about racism a lot and how America's racist. Yeah. He would disagree with all of these people.
Right. He seems like the easiest person to just boot off of YouTube. Like, I don't think anybody would miss Steven Crowder. No, I don't think his diehard fans. I think most people would be like, people who liked him would be like, oh, okay. And like there's, he doesn't stand for anything.
He's not adding anything.
Just kick him off YouTube. The problem, I think, would be solved.
Yeah,
honestly.
He would just be on like a subscription service for Blaze TV or something like
that. Yeah, exactly. That, and right? we could all just forget about him because he's...
But then you're silencing his minstrel shows. Well, and isn't, then, that the real, I mean, isn't that the real?
I did think you said
thing?
Menstrel show. Yeah. Which is
did I say menstrual show?
That'd be
I
meant
you probably didn't, but like, I heard it that way. We hear what we want to hear, you know?
I just wanted to add, in regards to, like, I agree, like, yeah, get rid of him. He violates their terms of service. He's like, he lies all the time. He's abusive and he's a bully and he is very homophobic and racist. When he came back, he's like, I got out of Twitter jail, found out that YouTube deleted my hour-long COVID rebuttal episode. Honestly, I'd feel a little off if I woke up and I wasn't banned from something. That's like, they crave that. They crave the ban.
They
crave, they fucking love it. So
also,
I don't even,
a COVID
even
rebuttal is funny to me. Just like, you know, like, oh, you say there's COVID, but actually,
but what
actually? It's like my rebuttal video to death. I just don't think it's real.
Nuh-uh. That's what I have to say. All right. Speaking of COVID, good pivot. Let's talk about COVID a little bit. I teased that at the top. People are getting vaccinated. It's real cool stuff. We are at this point, light at the end of the tunnel. Hold on, don't celebrate so much. This is the segment where I'm saying we have to continue being good boys and girls and doing our best, because this is the point where if we get too lax, we can have a resurgence. Like we're seeing in Europe, and they have to start reinstituting things and walking things back, like we're seeing around America already. I believe, yeah, didn't Fauci go on and the air this week and give an interview to that effect?
Just keep wearing those masks, folks. Like, I know it's annoying because it sounds like the goalposts are being shifted, but it's really not. It's because, like, for most of the shots, I think there are two shots. The J&J one may be one shot, but then you have to wait a few weeks for full efficacy. There's also, like, the research about whether it prevents transmission, because like it prevents you from getting very sick and it seems to do a lot to prevent infection, but preventing like transmission, like if you could shed the virus onto someone who's unvaccinated, that research is looking really promising, but it's not done yet. You know, just to keep everyone safe until they can get their shots, like you know, keep wearing, and especially like if you haven't gotten your shots yet, there's no reason to take your mask off yet. Like, we have not reached herd immunity yet. So it's just like, you know, keep doing the safe stuff. And it's going to be super soon that we can start.
Yeah, it's going to start picking up. And I know it's hard because even sitting here, people are starting to get vaccinated and you're like, me too. I want that.
I'm going to literally collect Dave's sweat and inject it into my like eyeballs.
I heard that's got a 50% efficacy rate and I'm okay with that.
That's why we call you the scientist.
I wanted to bring up one thing. Last week we talked about and encouraged people, yes, to get vaccinated. But if you know, were so inclined to try and join a wait list, and I totally do stand by that. We need to get people vaccinated as quickly as possible. One of you reached out, somebody who works at a clinic, to also point out that clinics are working really hard and they're inundated and a lot of them are getting swamped with calls. Before we started recording, Katie, you mentioned having spoken with somebody in the wait list was super long and stuff like that.
Yeah, they were they sounded very tired.
They sounded tired. And so I think that that's a really good point. Do not be in, you know, and they also shared the fact that a lot of people get aggressive, you know, showing up and wanting it. And while
yeah,
I
don't do that.
Don't do that. I mean, I understand your urgency, your desire, but we do have to have patience and we have to be respectful. You know, some clinic, they might have this policy where you're calling and doing a wait list, and that's a really long wait list. There are some places that, you know, I have friends who showed up and waited outside for 3 or 4 hours, and there was a standby line, and whatever doses they have left over at the end of the, you know, day or session, first we'll prioritize anybody in the standby line that's over 65 or have pre-existing conditions, and then after that, you can wait your turn. So, if you can be respectful and do have the ability to take yourself someplace like that, perhaps that's something to explore. But be very mindful and know that even if you're not eligible right now, you will be soon. We just
need patience. In California, can't you volunteer?
Yes. And also that we talked about that as well. I haven't explored this, but just a reminder, you can just at least here in California. And I bet that other places are going to be having programs that are similar.
Yeah.
You can volunteer.
I think if you get an appointment, that's best, right?
Yes.
I think if you go to a place that like specifically has a system in place for people who want to wait, mm-hmm. that works. I think if you're going to a clinic and you're going with someone else, you could maybe talk your way into also getting a shot, maybe, or just put your arm in there real quick when they give the shot. But like they were very chill where I was. I like the form with the pre-existing conditions. They give you a specific list, but they also say at the end like or anything that you think might like really endanger you. So for example, I had several reasons, mm-hmm. but like asthma is not on the list, but asthma is really serious for some people.
Yes, it is.
So I think if you look at that list and you say, oh, I don't have anything on that, but you genuinely do think you're in danger because of a pre-existing condition, you can go in, I think.
Yeah, and if you're not sure, just call your doctor and ask them, because like I know someone who has like a rare condition called this doctor, and this doctor was like, if you need me to write a note, I will.
Right.
Like, you should get one. You should be, you know, it's like such a rare thing that you're not on the list, but you should be, because this is definitely something that's a risk factor. So, you know, I think you'll know if you're being...
It's also somewhat like, an honor system.
You know, yeah, it's an honor system. I think we all kind of know, like, you know, what...
Yeah, don't be a jerk
good
and
behavior
abuse,
and, yeah,
abuse
exactly.
that honor system.
But like, you know,
but if you have a pre-existing condition and don't have a way to prove it, go do it.
Right. Like, don't feel ashamed. Like, if you have something that you think like should probably qualify, but you don't see it on the official list, and like, you know, just like, don't
yeah,
be
and
hard on
it's
yourself.
All different in different states. We have a friend in Oregon who was able to get the shot because they are a caregiver. And that's a very big consideration. So that's not the way it is here in California at the moment, but to the best of my knowledge, it isn't. But perhaps where you are, that is an option.
They do ask your occupation. Mm-hmm. Like, they have that on the sign up. But yeah, they will ask you when you go in. They'll say, why are you here and what pre-existing condition? And then they don't ask for proof. They just make you sign a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume if you lie, they'll come to your house and they'll give you COVID.
It will be released on social media at some point, and you will be canceled as well as given COVID. Mm-hmm. You're going to get the shot that undoes the vaccine.
Yeah.
Undoes, undoes.
Mm-hmm. Undoes it.
I'm
undoes
speaking it. Really nice undoes today.
Is. And just continue to be nice to people, you know, like, just like, we're almost there. Like, we're so like, be nice to your pharmacists, be nice to, you know, don't like, if someone posts like that they got the shot, like, don't shame them on social media. Like,
yeah,
oh yeah, what's wrong with you then? Like, why did you get the, you know, like, don't be,
it's, there will be enough for all of us.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good to vaccinate everybody. If a person gets the vaccine, that's good.
Say congratulations. Yes. I'm so happy for you.
Dave has just saved countless lives, mm-hmm. protecting them from his filth.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I'm a hero.
His mm-hmm. filthy spit molecules are now been neutralized for the rest of
I was going to say hero as well.
Yeah.
A real hero.
All right, before we go, Katie, you had something you wanted to talk about, and I desperately want you to talk about it. So this is your time to shine.
I'm going to speed run this. So this is Steve Mnuchin's wife, Louise Linton, stars in a movie she made called Me, You, Madness, in which she plays a very rich serial killer who preys on attractive men that she invites to her huge palatial mansion. She eats a man's balls, but then falls in love with one of her handsome victims. The movie is bad. Here's a line from the movie. My name is Catherine Black. You may think that I'm a materialistic, narcissistic, self-absorbed misanthrope. I don't deny it. I'm a hedge fund manager. I'm addicted to fashion, the accumulation of money, exercise, and sex. My life is incredible. Which basically describes Louise Linton's life.
Except that she doesn't go for the attractive boys.
Right, I guess not.
I don't want to shame anybody except Steve Mnuchin.
Right, right. And so her co-star is Ed Westwick, who has been accused of multiple cases of sexual assault. So that is the caliber at which this movie is. In the trivia of the IMDb page is this weird weirdness. This like, it's also racist. So Louise Linton came up with the concept for You, Me, Madness after falling asleep in a hot car following a trip to the pharmacy. She describes Doors like vision of an indigenous man telling her to make a movie about a girl boss serial killer. So she did. Wow, interesting. What an artist.
What?
It sounds like
it's like when Paul McCartney wrote Yesterday.
Yeah. She fell asleep in a hot car outside a pharmacy.
This is
She also cannot maintain an accent. She doesn't know what accent it is.
You watched it?
No, I did not watch the movie. I practice self-love and good self-love, yeah. So good I did girl. Not watch the movie. I watched the trailer and
that's
scene
all
from
you
it.
Needed.
That's all you need.
It sounds like a real missed opportunity for her to collaborate with Armie Hammer, though.
Yeah,
is my first.
Oh yeah, it could have been like two cannibals.
Yeah,
in love. Maybe,
come on.
It would have had a huge amount of success, I think.
Yeah.
Too bad, Louise.
Too bad, Louise.
This sounds like a nightmare. Thank you for sharing it.
You're very welcome. Do look up the trailer. Do look up the clip where she dances just to some awkward music for about 2 minutes.
Beautiful.
Oh, I saw that. It was incredible.
I did see that.
I will unfortunately
also
see
her doing
it.
That series of movies, just like listing names of movies.
Oh yeah, she looks at the camera with she keeps posing with a prop gun and lists movies.
This is just
like Deadpool, like Deadpool and The Matrix.
It's rich people who didn't hear no.
And I
right? That's what's
yeah.
happening.
I can't Absolutely. Figure out a context in which that scene makes sense. She's just saying like this is like a movie, just like you see like Deadpool or The Matrix. So this.
Those two movies that are the same.
Right, those movies. Like, she just starts listing yeah. movies as, like, see, I know
Way
these
of the
cultural
gun.
Touchstones. I'm a human. I understand.
I'm so, a movie buff.
My guess is that it's her character's, like, turning into the killer, whatever. I don't know. The gun lady. And so it's her first time holding a gun. And she's like, oh, I know how to hold a gun. I've seen, and then the list of movies.
Oh, I see.
All of them are, like, gun-related.
Right. Dirty Harry.
Yeah.
Cars. Pixar's The Cars. Does one of the cars hold a gun?
I'm trying
related,
to see if Steve Mnuchin has
to cars?
Produced these.
No, that was me, Katie.
Oh, good.
But yeah, it's bad. It's don't watch. It's not like one of these things where it's like, oh, it's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
Like I
we're
yeah,
not gonna hate watch this.
Like no, don't hate go. Watch it. Just watch the highlight reel of like people who hate watched
it
for
yeah.
you. Because there are like brave people who hate watch movies for you and put clips on the internet. So
yes,
do check those out.
Go watch the Zack Snyder Justice League instead.
No,
yeah.
don't.
You know,
guys,
take 4 hours out of your day.
Oh
yeah.
God,
practice.
Talk about that, we're gonna need a lot more time.
Yeah, practice self-love and don't
just
do that.
Just say no.
Just say no to bad movies.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us today. I think you're great, both of you. Just fucking top-notch.
Aww.
Out of this world. Great. Everybody knows
you
online.
I agree with her completely.
But just share where they can find you online anyway.
Katie?
Yes, I'm Katie Golden. I host a podcast called Creature Feature where I talk about aminals and the cool stuff they do. Probably by the time this comes out. No. I guess a week after this comes out, I'm going to talk about a self-decapitating sea slug. So that'll
Ooh.
Be fun.
Yes.
So, check that out. And I'm at Katie Golden on Twitter. That's KATIEGOLDIN. I also do Pro Bird Rights, which is a account of a bird. Yes.
That's nice. That's accurate. That's true.
I have a Patreon account with Tom Ryan. Ryman, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. We have exclusive podcasts on there, including Tom and Jeff Watch Batman, where they will be covering the Zack Snyder Justice League.
Here we go.
Four episode series. So if you want someone else to watch that movie for you,
is that an episode out. Per hour?
An episode per hour.
It's an episode per hour. Nice. That's correct.
Perfect.
I'll be on one of the episodes covering one of the hours.
But we don't know which one.
Yeah, so you'll have to listen to them all to find you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm on Twitter at Movie Hooligan. That's it. That's my stuff.
That's all the stuff. That's it. That's all we got this week. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, remember, we love you very much.